Welcome to this episode of Why Pals Tales from the Shipyard Laundry. I'm joined today by the gorgeous Bianca. You may know her because she's the owner of Studio Côte d'Azur in the south of France. Any of you yoga and Pilates bunnies out there, I know there's lots on board, you may know of her. Welcome.
Thank you.
You may notice that I've not attempted to say your surname. We just had a discussion about that previously. I just can't mask her surnames. I'm actually really shy. We were just saying I'm really shy when talking in a French accent because I've always felt like the French were just, you know, internally they were shaking their head and rolling their eyes at me, even if they weren't. Just stop massacring my language. But how are you doing? How cold is it where you are right now? I think is
yeah. It actually, we had a little bit of snow this morning. So I'm in Sweden. My business is on the Riviera, but I live here full time with my husband and our two kids and our dog. So it's okay. We're in the middle of the winter now, and you know, it's cold, but I've just been in Antibes actually, and I will say that the French Riviera feels colder than Sweden in the winter. I don't know if it's the houses or it's that I don't anticipate that it's meant to be cold when I'm there, but yeah, it just feels colder on the skin. Here it's
warmer. The houses. Anybody who's done a winter in Parma, it always feels colder because none of the houses are, like, obviously it's all just designed for heat and they just wear extra layers, get through the winter, and then it's all hot and sunny again. I did a winter in Parma. Our boat was in the yard, and I just could not believe how cold I was all of the time. Like, I was just freezing, but you could have no radiators. No. So, like, you're just using these electric heaters to heat the room. As soon as you open the door, then it's gone, and they've got those wooden shutters that have got, like, holes in, and, like, oh, just... Yeah, cold.
I know exactly what you mean. I remember when I first came over to Antibes to look for work, it was April 2012, and I had shorts and Crocs to go dock walking, and I was freezing. And I got there, South African, I had no money, or everything was at that time 10 to 1 or 11 to 1. Now it's like almost 20 to 1 rand. €1, €20. And so I didn't have any money to buy anything more than just deal with shorts and Crocs. And that was my dock walking start. And it took me forever to find my first job. But yeah, I realized that the French Riviera is not as warm as you think it is until June, July.
Well, let's see, like, as you've mentioned the start, obviously from South Africa. What made, like, were you not loving life in South Africa? What were you doing before yachting came into your life?
Wow. Yeah, I was actually working in radio broadcasting and digital media. So I studied radio journalism and I loved it. I really, I just loved what I did. But I was at a point where I was like, you know, and I hear so many yachties share this, like, I was working in quite a corporate job at the time, quite a bit of responsibility, just long hours, sitting at a desk, sitting in traffic. I was in a bit of a dead-end relationship. And I just thought, like, there has to be so much more to this than this, you know. And my best friend was yachting at the time. And, of course, at that time, like, Facebook, just seeing all of her pictures, like, this is amazing. And I just popped her a message one day and I said, how do I do this? I want to do this as well. And she kind of, you know, go and do this course. At that time, it wasn't that formal, you know, you could just get by with an SDCW and some sort of basic something. I went over to France, just resigned, left my boyfriend, packed it all up and
left a boyfriend. Well, that's not very common, leaving a boyfriend. But you think it's that moment where you're kind of like, finished school, sitting in the corporate, you know, you're like, is this going to be it? Like that moment where you're like, I'm going to do this for 30 years.
Yeah,
you just 40 years. Like, that's a long time.
Yeah, no, it was a total, you know, I've always had a spirit of adventure in me, and I get this from my dad. My dad is, you know, he's been traveling for years and, you know, interested in the world and very enthusiastic about different cultures, different people. And you just get to a point where it's like, no, it can't be this. I mean, I'm in the kind of prime years of my life. This just doesn't work. And I remember writing my boyfriend at the time a letter, and it was quite philosophical, actually. And I tried to find it. Yeah. And I was just like, you know, listen, I love you and all. And also, I cannot see myself living like this. Like, if I look forward, one of my captains always said to me, he said, you know, Bianca, if you look around you, the people that are around you, the things that you're doing, if nothing changes, you're going to be in the same position in 5 years' time. And I was like, yeah, that was a little bit my thinking. Like, am I going to be in the same position in 5, 10? You know, I just don't want this. And then I went yachting and I had an amazing first season working with this captain on a small boat. It was just three of us. And he has been a huge inspiration in my life. And he's one of my greatest teachers. He's just the most phenomenal man. And I was like, this yachting thing is amazing. These captains, they also, you know, he didn't drink. He was just like a complete darling. This was like jewel to find. Doesn't drink. He was, you know, worked as a like family therapist and in like healing modalities. Who is this guy? I know. And so this was my first season.
Wow.
And him and his wife are still very much present in our lives. They were our witnesses at our wedding, and his wife was with us when my daughter was born at home. So I mean, we've my husband and I have really taken them into our lives and them into theirs and us into theirs. So of course I had this wonderful view of yachting in that first season, just like, oh, this is great. Like, this yachting thing is amazing. But still I just said, you know, I was only going to do 1 year, and, you know, I was planning to go back to South Africa and sort of, you know, settle down, whatever that means. And then I met my husband 2 or 3 weeks before the end of my first season.
Wow. And, you literally had like the most romantic entrance into the yachting industry.
Yeah. And it just went downhill from there. So
obviously this is a beautiful experience and you're loving it, and obviously the views and the amazing captain who's we must have found the only one in the industry that didn't drink at the time, let alone be a therapist. What were your initial but can you think back to any kind of first impressions, like what resonated with you the most in that beginning year? So I suppose in a way you were thinking it was just going to be like a gap year experience type thing.
Yeah, so there were three of us on board. It was a tiny boat. I mean, I think it was like 20, 25 meters. And the irony was it was called New Beginnings. I was like, yeah, how bizarre. I've always found like the names of some of the boats I've worked on have always been like kind of resonating with what happens in my life. But I was working on, so I was deck stew on board, and I remember I just love being on deck, and I spent more time on deck than I did on the interior in my time working on board. And I just loved how physical it was. I mean, I'm a physical woman, and I've gone on to do things that are very much related with the body and movement and all of that, And I also love the idea of, you know, just doing a washdown and seeing from the morning to the evening, like, wow, okay, this is my work. You know, you take a step back and you look at what you've done. And I felt that was so rewarding, because in my corporate life, you know, you're working hard, but it's like, what do you really have to show for it, you know? And I felt in that first year just so rewarded by the work, because, you know, you were seeing new places, you were meeting interesting people. I was obviously seeing the results of my hard work, and I was like, wow, I mean, this is very exciting. So that really stuck with me. And then obviously the crew that we had, it was just perfect. The three of us got on so well, and I felt very inspired working with Christian as well, and his just philosophy of life. You know, we'd just sort of sit there and have our crew lunch, and we'd chat for ages and ages and ages.
It sounds really very idyllic. Like, I'm just jealous. New beginnings, interesting men to chat to. Like, it's not selling it to me at all.
No, I mean, you can see why I made the decision to kind of do a season.
Yeah. We haven't even got to the bit where you met, like, your eyes met across a crowded room, you met your husband. Like, where did that happen in this dream scenario?
Well, I mean, everybody asks us, and it's always fun to say that we met at the trash, because it wasn't that romantic. But no, he was working on deck on a boat a couple of doors down. We sort of saw each other coming in and out of port, obviously, you know, putting the fenders out and so on. He timed it that he took out the trash at the same time as me. So we did meet at the trash. It wasn't, yeah.
It sounds really cute, kind of, like, for a black thing, man.
But I will say to you that I met him, and us hooking up is also that part we can talk about off camera. Let's put it that way. But let's add in, you know, Hob Store Drinkers Club and Absinthe Bar in one evening, and, you know,
I'm surprised you remember.
Well, I mean, you know, and him sort of scooping me up off the passerelle because I'd gone home and fallen asleep on his on the mat outside his boat. So yeah, it was quite traumatic, actually, because, you know, my mum had always said to me, you just never do that. A man will never, ever, ever want to marry you if you do that. You know, in South Africa.
She hadn't met a yachty at that point, you know.
No,
like that. That's kind of romantic. Oh, she was on the mat for me. Bless her.
I do remember thinking to myself, like, this guy's I remember thinking he's never going to want to marry me. And yeah, next Friday, we're up for 10 years of being married. So, you know,
wow.
Breaking mom's rules there. But,
Passerelle love. Passerelle love.
I remember very soon after meeting him and us getting together, it must have been like 2 weeks afterwards, I phoned my mom. And I said to her, I've met the man that's going to be the father of my children. I just had this, never really felt inspired to get married, and neither did he. But little did he know he had a South African woman, and, you know, there's only one way to keep us in Europe, and that's to marry us. So,
the green mamba's going to get you. Got to be pretty committed to make your life easier. It's so hard for you guys to kind of travel about, and, you know, it's very, very, very the stories I've heard, it's very difficult.
Yeah, it is. And I'm actually still on a South African passport after all these years.
You've not got rid of it yet.
No. And, you know, I've applied for my Swedish passport now, and if I had to choose, I'm just not sure that I would. Yeah, I don't know. Don't make me choose, because I'm South African in my blood.
It is a big thing, but just for travel ease.
Travel places like the UK, for example.
It's fine, just keep both. So obviously you've met the man you're going to marry. It is a bit weird. I can resonate with that, because I wasn't particularly maternal, and I definitely had relationships, but didn't really believe in the one kind of scenario. But when I met my husband, I can honestly say the first kiss, there was something different about it. And I don't know why, but there was something really different. And I'd kissed a few people in my time. So for it to be different is quite special, you know, like, and it's, yeah, when you know, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely knew I was going to have his children. And I'd never had that feeling with anyone before. And I'm really grateful that we've had children together, because it's actually one area of our lives that has not really been that complicated. Because, you know, like we were saying before we started recording, that for me, I think one of the biggest challenges for yachting couples, and I see this now, I mean, I've just been staying with a friend of mine, her husband's Argentinian, she's British, and they're in the later stages of their marriage, you know, they're in the late 50s, 60s, early 60s, and they're still talking about where they're going to live. You know, they're an ex-yachting couple, they're still talking about where they're going to retire and where they're going to be. And I just said to them, this seems to be a huge challenge from the very moment that you meet until even your retirement years as a yachting couple. You know, where are we going to live? We still talk about this, my husband and I. You know, we moved to Sweden in 2020, end of 21, and we're very happy here. But, you know, I think yachting really expands your worldview. And most couples who have a regular life and a regular job and marry someone from just down the road, you know, this isn't a conversation really that's always on the table. It's like, where are we going to live? Where are we going to work?
I resonate with that loads, because we live, obviously, I moved to where my husband's from. We're in our house now and it's very lovely. But in my head, we've got one more move. In his head, this is the house we're going to live in forever. And he's like, we're going to live in it forever. And I'm like, I think there's one more move. I really do feel like there's one more move, you know. But he's just adamant. He's like, you're no way, we've spent too much money on this house. We're not going anywhere. But is that there is one more move, or is that the internal fight with the yachty, you know, the yachty explorer, adventurer stops? But do those urges and those feelings really ever disappear? You know, if you don't satisfy your traveling bug with holidays and stuff like that, it's just that restlessness, because you have gambled, and a lot of the gambles have really paid off. And even the hard ones, you learned something. So, it, you know, like we've said, I've said on other episodes, it's addictive. You know, that's what yachting is in a lot of ways. It's the next adventure, and you just get, like, you know, the buzz of waking up somewhere brand new is, you know, one of the best ever. So we have to wrestle with our
wild
woman's
selves, wild wolves. When you have children, like, for example, our kids were born in France. We live in Sweden now, my husband's Swedish, and I'm South African. And I ask my kids, like, where are you guys from? And, you know, it's like, how do we answer this question? Like, where do they come from? Well, I mean, of course, they come from a beautiful place, these two little beings, but, you know, it becomes really, and, you know, we now have parents who are getting older, and, you know, family, and I'm lucky to be, but I'm an only child, so I'm not separated from my siblings, but, you know, my husband was for a long period of time when, you know, so it's like, where do we belong?
I think culturally, in today's society, wherever you are, there is a crisis at the moment with what is culture now, because so many people have moved around, and what kept communities and countries together is not the same anymore. You know, what is national identity? You know, what do you relate to? It gets tricky, you know, and then you end up kind of like, you know, your children might say, well, they're just children of the world, you know, they're connected to everything. You know, it's very difficult to kind of navigate, I think, at the moment, when people are trying to crave connection, when all of the old connections and common ground are kind of slipping away, because our lifestyles have changed also very dramatically as well. It's quite interesting to say that, because what would your children say that they were or not? Or, you know, it's just like, if you go to any country, you know, if I had a child in France with two British parents, would they say that they were French, or would they say that they're British? They were born in France, but then obviously all of their influence would be very strongly both British and French. Mm-hmm. Probably the worst combination of nations. Resolve within one interior. Thinking about it, being... I think it's a little unfair on the children, to be honest.
We'll do this at home.
You're like, oh no, you probably, it's the worst combination to try and reconcile historically. But yeah, it's quite an interesting thing. I mean, do you feel more at home where you are now than you ever have anywhere else? Or, you know, are you still thinking that, you know, forever home is somewhere else? Because obviously you, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. When did you want to leave your thing? When did it start to kind of like this beautiful romance? You've got your husband. I imagine you ended up working on board together.
No, we've actually, and I think that's probably why we're still together, because if we'd worked together, I'm not entirely sure we would have survived. No, but we do work together now, actually. And we work very well together, because we really both understand this industry in such a, and it is such a unique industry that it does help to leave it and work somehow in it together, because there's such common ground there. But no, we never worked together on board. I had a disastrous three years on board. I mean, I look back, and now that I'm actually talking through it with you, I can really see what a disaster it was having this honeymoon first season. And then my husband had just taken a job on a boat in the Caribbean. And when we met, and he said to me, you know, just give me 1 year. Give me 1 year and then we can just put our lives together from there. So I was, okay, well, that sounds good to me. So I went and traveled South America for 3 months.
Nice.
Yeah. And just, you know, just took some time off. I always worked seasonally, so I never did dual seasons. And then the first boat after the boat that I, the, my dream job, or dream year, was on the East Coast of Africa. And I got on board and I was just suddenly completely in a different space to what I'd been when I was in the Med for my first season. I just suddenly realized, okay, this is like cowboy style. And I don't want to go into too many details. I lasted on board for 3 weeks and I just took this captain out at the knees. He was a complete, just irresponsible. There were drugs on board. It was actually, looking back, like quite a scary scenario. And we were also we were really off the beaten track. I mean, we weren't in an easy part of the world. And he fired me, and literally I got dropped from the boat into a port in Mozambique. I will never forget this as long as I live. I didn't have any visas to be in Mozambique because I joined the vessel in Tanzania, and I was like, and there were, I still remember guys on these cargo ships like catcalling me as soon as the tender brought me ashore, and I'm in this port with guys catcalling me in Mozambique. I was like, this is really petrifying.
I mean, for you to say, like, because obviously, like, my idea of safety and South Africans' idea of safety, like, you guys, you know, you know some stuff. It's not always safe wherever you go. For sure. An individual like yourself to go, I was absolutely like grabbing myself like I'm not in a good space. That's pretty, that's dire times. Like, I don't know about what happened to you, but like I'd probably just be crying going, help, I need an embassy.
Where's the embassy? Well, you know, in that moment I I had $200 in my pocket. I found a cab. I just asked him to take me to the airport and to please speak to somebody and help get me out of this situation. I just gave him the cash. I was like, please, can you just sort this out? Because I know I don't have the visas to fly out. And the captain had also booked my flight in the wrong name. He'd misspelled my name, my flight back to South Africa. So, I mean, I was really in a complete spin. But, you know, that situation really taught me a lot. And suddenly my eyes were just open to, like, what other captains are out there, let's put it that way.
And yeah, that's what you said, you said this dream captain, like I don't know where he is. I'm hoping somebody's given reward for being so lovely. That's not, you know, it's not common. There are, don't get me wrong, there's lots of lovely captains out there, but there are, if they're bad, they generally are
really bad. Yeah. No, it was quite something. But
did that put you off for yachting forever?
Then at that point, I was like, okay, let's give this mid season another whirl. I did work with a couple of good captains in that second season. And then, you know, the third season I came back. At that point, I'd already decided that, you know, yachting wasn't something that I saw myself doing long term. And it had never been something I saw myself doing long term. And so between my second and third season, I always wanted to be a Pilates teacher. I'd said that from when I was 19, when I started practicing Pilates. I always said, like, I want to do this as a profession. I just love it. I love the practice. I love everything about Pilates. So I saw myself doing that. And I thought, well, let me just try and bring these skills on board. And back in that kind of era of yachting, like 2014, it was, you know, it wasn't as common as what it is now. And we're seeing more bigger boats wanting, you know, stews and deckies who have dual roles, and yeah, you know, massage therapist stew and yoga teachers stew and so on. So it was still very niche at that point, and I went and I just did a mat work training to learn how to teach Pilates on the mat. And then that final season I taught Pilates mainly to my crew, but also every now and again guests would ask for it or knew that I had that skill. But that final season, I just stormed off. I mean, you asked me in the beginning, like, what made me leave yachting. I mean, I just ended up with a very drunk, captain on charter, you know, next to one of the bosses or one of the charter guests, women. And the engineer asking me if I could take the boat out and anchor it, because I knew how to take the boat out, asking me if I could take the boat out and anchor it while the captain sobered up and cleaned up before he, you know, carried on going for charter. And it was also a smaller boat, 30 something meters. And I wake up in the morning with the engineer, Bianca, please, can you just, because my dream captain had taught me how to drive and he taught me how to park. And he'd said, you know, if something happens to me at sea, you need to be able to do these things. And he was such an amazing teacher. So, you know, in my first season, I'd learned how to do these things because I needed to for safety. And so, of course, I wake up the morning of this charter. Can you take the boat out and just anchor it here? The port are telling us we need to leave because another boat's coming in. And then we'll just wait until he sobers up and then we can carry on with, like, you know, the charter. And at this point, I was already just, you know, South African said, but like, gutful. I was just done. Like, this is ridiculous. I mean, how can I be working for these people? And try and find the captain. Where is he? Oh, no, I don't know where he is. Oh, yeah. Okay. It turns out that he's in one of the guest cabins with a woman. Okay, and he's also married, and yeah, and so you know this kind of stuff. I'm not, like, getting into the details was like this kind of nonsense, and that day I was just like, you know what, I am not gonna get into a car with you. I'm not gonna get into an airplane with you, and there's sure as hell no reason why I'm gonna stay on this boat with you, because I do not feel safe. And it wasn't the first scenario that we'd had on board. I mean, we'd been out at sea many times with him not sober, and it was dangerous, yep. You know, and it is dangerous. And the reality is there are more incidents happening in yachting now, and, you know, or at least it's coming up more that safety is a huge thing, and we can't, I don't mean to, you know, I've had my time, I've been as naughty, I've done naughty things too, but there just comes a point where you're like, there's something very wrong if there's not the basic safety policies in place here.
But that, engineer waking you up. Can you just say, while the captain finishes off his bird in the guest cabin, well, then you're going to have to go down and sort the guest cabin out afterwards. Like,
I just thought of myself, this is not a world I want to work in. And so I left mid-charter. I just packed my bags right then and there. I stripped my bed. I put my...
That's considerate.
I was like, I'm not going to leave the chef to do this. I mean, there's no stewardess now. So, and it was also, you know, of course, everybody tried to make me feel very bad about that, leaving mid-charter and leaving the guests and all the crew without any support. But I was like, I just have to be clear about this. I don't stand for this. And that was the last boat I worked on. And so, when I look back on yachting, it was an amazing journey. And I've learned so much, and I really love the industry, but I was not going to, tolerate that. Yeah.
I mean, we've all worked on boats that are a bit loose, you know, but generally, like, my experience of loose boats is when there's no guests on, there's no responsibility, we're not going anywhere, everybody goes a bit wild, kind of like, yeah, right, okay, but not when you've got guests, like, when you're on a boat and people are being wild with the round guests and stuff like that, like, it's not possible to pick up the slack, so the whole situation is just imploding. So, you know, I do like the fact you stripped your bed before. It's like, I don't love you completely in the shit. I've just stripped your bed for you to make it a little bit easier. Now I'm going. See ya.
Good luck.
I wish you all the best. Laundry's ready to be done, whoever takes it.
I mean, I had the guys from the port. It was funny because they were waiting for me, of course, because this other boat was needing to come in. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. I mean, imagine me at the helm just taking her out until we can anchor out. It's like, this would be ridiculous. So I had the guys from the port waiting to take me to the train station. And they were in stitches. They were just like, you're hilarious, you know, because I just couldn't have any of it. And and I just jumped on the train, and actually first stop, I stopped over at my wonderful captain for my first summer, and they were doing a washdown, and it was washdown Wednesday, I still remember. And I just said, I just need to debrief here. I've just left the biggest storm.
that's quite a tale, I have to say. Like, it is, that's quite a tale. But, you know, on a serious note, you talk about, we laugh about these stories, but obviously when you're in it and you're experiencing it, and women, you know, that wasn't the first instance, so you've stayed, you know, like all of us do on board, the situation's getting out of control, but you try to stick at it.
Yeah.
How much damage is done to you with that, you know, with that sticking around? You know, I think what I hope is changing with the industry is that women are feeling a lot stronger to do what you did in the end, to get off and go, no. Mm-hmm. Because how many have just stuck it out? and then not really understanding how much damage they're doing to themselves, you know, the trauma that they'll be absorbing, just
and also
feeling like they can't get off, you know, captain's got my passport kind of scenario, now all of those kind of things.
Yeah.
It just makes me wonder how many girls, how many women, because I, you know, I've spoken to quite loads now. We've all got a tale of, you know, maybe those moments where we should have got off loads earlier.
Well, I mean, it's like on one side of the coin, it's what happens for women when they stay. But I'm a woman who, you know, my first captain's always said this about me. He said, Bianca, you're a woman who can smell, hear, feel, see bullshit from a mile away.
Yeah.
And I have a very low tolerance of bullshit. I just, it's my nature. I'm one of these people who, like, we got a cracking tip from a guest who had young girls on board. And that tip I just donated straight away to a charity in South Africa that works with abused women. I have a very strong moral compass, and just going back to, like, yeah, some women stay, but the women who choose to leave, like me, I mean, this captain went on to win an award, a best captain award.
Oh my God.
And so, you know, I look from the outside and I think, what is, and, you know, and yachting is very, is there such words like nepotistic, but like, yep. You know, it's very, it's a brotherhood. It's who knows who, it's who is connected with who, it's who, you know. And so as a woman who takes a stand and says, actually, this guy's a complete loser. I can't, like, that organization that awarded him this best captain award, I can't take them seriously, because I'm like, you know, it's all a buddy-buddy system. And I felt, and even sharing this story with you, like a huge amount of shame and also quietness at, like, I shouldn't be speaking out about this because, you know, maybe it was once off and, you know, I've also messed up once or twice. I've also had a few drinks, like maybe it's me, you know, like, that narrative, that happened more than 10 years ago. And I still, you know, I'm grateful, Cherise, that you've given me a space and, you know, to put that story out there. Who knows how it will come back. But I just think we have to add that voice and kind of really pop that bubble of shame, because for the women who do choose to leave, especially women who want to stay in the industry, I mean, I didn't want to stay in the industry. It didn't matter to me. My reputation in yachting.
Yeah.
But, you know, what happens to those women who go to the crew agent afterwards and say, I'm looking for a job? Oh, but I left because I stormed out mid-charter. I mean, that doesn't look great in your CV, does it?
And no, it doesn't look great on your CV. And how it's reacted to, you know, like, I, you know, my first boat, I stood my ground. I kicked off. I got fired because I stood my ground. And basically, all I wanted was nice food. I was tired, I reacted, and apparently that's enough. But then, yeah, you have to go to, you know, and I don't know whether that's what one of the things that I, one of the reasons why with Yacht Pearls of Wisdom, they go for younger females also, because they're less likely, you know, if you're a woman of a certain age. So I was, you know, nearly 30 at the time, going into my 30s. My life experience, you know, I wouldn't tolerate such, you know, like that kind of behavior. So if you are always hiring 22, 23, 24, 25, they haven't got the life experience to go, you know what, this is, you know, don't get me wrong, there are definitely some, but they don't have that, you know, I'm not, this is not right, this is not.
And you're just so vulnerable. I mean, like, take for example what happened when I left. You know, I stormed off. I had this this nice powerful reaction, and I stormed off, and then I was like, right, now I'm a South African, I'm living ashore essentially, I don't have another job lined up, you know, I visas, you're in a foreign country, you know, if I got hit by a bus or needed to be hospitalized in that moment, or, I mean, you know, it's just, I wasn't, you know, the contracts, it's just, it, you just are more vulnerable. And I think the industry has really improved a lot in the last 10 years. Sure, the last 5 years in protecting crew and it needs to carry on. But, you know, I think especially for women, it's not easy to make nice, strong moral decisions all the time when you're working on board.
No, I mean, I've talked about it before, you know, compromising your moral compass at the time, you know, doesn't seem like a big thing, but it will haunt you. It will haunt you for the rest of your life. And you could say that that's like a trauma or whatever, but like it's something that will stay with you, and I would strongly advise to avoid at all costs whenever you can. You know, there is definitely worth being proud of your reactions, like basically not taking the boat out in anchor. And you know, you can walk away and you see that situation completely differently. But it's, you know, hopefully women's experiences are changing. The conversation's changed massively since I started. It's changed, so you know, it's all good. So I imagine during all of this drama, you're still talking to the love of your life, who's cruising around the Caribbean, enjoying himself. You're like,
my husband and I, we're so different, and it's actually so grounding. I mean, I really do need him in my life, if I put it this way. He you know, he's very pragmatic. He's very grounded. He's, you know, not emotional about these things. And I must say, it really helped me through those early times where it was very chaotic. And, you know, of course, at that point I'd moved ashore, and I just decided pretty much within a day or two of touching down, like, I want to pursue Pilates and I want to go further with this. This is ultimately what I always wanted to do, and now is the opportunity to do it. So, and then I started with some more intensive training and all of that. But of course, then it became more challenging with visas and so on. So, so we very quickly organized to get married, which was fabulous. So we got married on Valentine's Day in 2015, really romantic. And so that gave me the opportunity to kind of transition and move ashore. And I always said to my husband that I wanted to work in a profession where I could do what I was going to do anywhere in the world, because I just knew that him staying in yachting would mean that our base would probably change and I would need to have my skills on my back and be able to be empowered from that point of view. So 2015, I set up my business, my first business, which was called Crew Pilates. Set that up. And then that's what I've been doing ever since.
That's quite incredible. But obviously, as it's been said many times, yachting does provide that perfect springboard into maybe chasing your dreams. You know, it really can, you know, strips away everything else. So if there is a clear vision, you can pull it into reality. Generally, it is very unique.
It's, for me, like, it wasn't a financial springboard. I was working seasonally, and of course, when money flowed in, it was great. But I didn't, I didn't have much in terms of savings. I hadn't really been smart financially when I was working on board. And so the springboard that yachting gave me was a bit different. It was actually more a view into luxury hospitality, which, when I put aside all the kind of nonsense and noise of yachting and my experiences working with some really interesting captains, let's put it that way. But I actually have a real heart for the luxury side of it and the hospitality side and service. Like, I love that. I love spoiling people. I love taking care. I love, you know, and being South African, I just hadn't had a window into that world. And so you know, that's really the springboard that it gave me. And when I opened my first studio in Antibes, I had a few guests who were like, oh, we want to try Pilates. Like, this was, you know, a guest that I'd worked with before. And so I would start to work with some, you know, some guests and some crew. And, you know, now things have really evolved and I've got the studio Côte d'Azur and it's a beautiful space and I've got wonderful team there. And now we're pretty much only working in the high-end hospitality space, especially in the summer. So we are working with very high-end villas. We've got a number of prestigious families on our client database, client lists. And we are working with the same guests that are chartering and own yachts. They're coming to the studio to do Pilates and that philosophy, that love, that passion for hospitality that I learned in yachting and learned that I loved when I was on board, is something that I've brought into my business. And our clients notice it. It's what makes our studio really stand out. So that's this kind of springboard that I got in yachting.
It's quite incredible. It does look lush. I have to confess that I've never tried Pilates. I went down the yoga path, but it's always been really interesting. There's not actually anywhere to do Pilates near me, too far away. But I will give it a go one day. I think. I mean, Your studio does look beautiful, but how are you juggling? You don't live in France anymore. So your business is in France and you're in Sweden. Like, how's that working out?
There's a lot of gray in here. So, I mean, one thing I can say is that, you know, it's all about the people. It's all about the people that I have in place. So I have a wonderful team and a loyal team and I just wouldn't be able to do it without them. So I've really structured things as best as I can. And I'm trying to get better at systemizing it so that, you know, I'm less and less operational and, you know, I can work on bringing more business in for us and, you know, and put the right people in place to help me with, you know, all the things that just chew up your time, social media, you know, administration. My husband and I own the property where we have our studio and, you know, it's also having a property in another country and all of that. So it's a real logistical nightmare. And I'm, you know, I work way too hard. That's for sure. I'm a very hard worker. I love what I do. It doesn't feel like work. So I really have to, be disciplined about giving my family also the space and creating that life of balance. But yeah, I go back now maybe 3 or 4 times a year. I was just back now for 2 weeks. I'll be back again in June. And yeah, my team just, they deal with the summer without me, but you know, I'm on call here and yeah, just trying to juggle it, but it is definitely harder work than it looks. I have said this, that in my next life, I'm coming back as a client in my studio. I'm not coming back as the one who owns the thing.
No. Who wants to go into business? Who wants to go into business? Yeah. Only wins, as far as I'm concerned. Exactly. So before we finish off, just got 3 last questions. What's Bianca doing in 5 years? Like, what's going on for you? You know, it's sort of like ask the universe type scenario. Well, what's what would you like? What do you see?
You know, I get emotional thinking about this, but I do think I've come into my life to teach. I love teaching, and I also have this belief that when you love teaching, you're also a student. You're somebody who is an eternal student of life. And so I have come to, in my years of teaching, really see the human body in a very special way. And I'm specializing my own teaching now in women's health and working with women's health. So my clients now are only women. And I just love working with women. I love teaching women. I love learning from women about the journey, you know, and the journey to health. And I don't mean this in a cheesy way of like, you know, eat well, sleep enough. But, you know, I just come to see this huge link between the mind and the body for women, and also what makes us sick, what makes us heal. And so when I see my journey in 5 years, I'm hoping that administratively and the kind of dry workload that I have with my studio has diminished, and that I'm teaching my work more than what I have the space to do now.
Yeah. I don't doubt that you'll get there. I don't doubt. If you could give 3 bits of advice to a woman on board right now, what would your pearls of wisdom be?
Oh, wow. One, your health always comes first. Like, always put your health first, your mental health, your physical health. I've been working quite closely now with yacht crew who are interested to study Pilates. And I've just been dropped a little bit back into the world of yachting and meeting younger women in the industry and hearing about some of the boats that they're working on and the scenarios they're in. And women are compromising their health on a big level, their menstrual health, their mental health. And it's actually a lesson that I only learned after leaving yachting, but you know, we're women who love serving. We love pleasing. We love other people having a good time, a good holiday, a good guest trip, a good lunch or whatever we're doing. And we pour so much energy of ourselves into our work, just by nature of being yachties and being who, yeah. And I think just take it back to your own health. Am I feeling well? Is this boat supportive of my physical health, my mental health? If the answer is no, it's not the right place to be, no matter how much you're earning.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second pearl is to invest in yourself. I have always taken of what I have and reinvested it in myself. If that's in therapy, if that's in coaching, if that's in courses, or, you know, just find things that you can invest in yourself, and you will have those skills with you your whole life. No one can ever take them away from you. Maybe the third one is tell them to fuck off when you don't drive the boat out.
Time to do one. Do one.
And just leave.
Okay. I like the last one. That's pretty good. I just don't be afraid to say, yeah, 100%. To finish up then, do you have, although you did tell quite a crazy story within the podcast, do you have any crazy story where, when I say crazy story, we've had a bit of a mix. So we have had crazy stories where people have, you know, funny, not funny, scary, but one story that kind of just sits with you, and it just really describes how bonkers it is.
Oh,
what
my
brings
God
to mind?
Yeah, I've got a list here, and I know what's at the top of my list, but yeah, because of the nature of who and how it happened, I can't share it, unfortunately. I'm sorry to say.
Well, what we might do is we might get you to write it down, and we'll maybe get do it anonymously at a later date.
Anonymous.
I have to say, you have given us a crazy story in the middle of this podcast. So thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time. And hopefully I'll be able to see you in the south of France at some point.
Yes. When is the next Pearls of Wisdom events? I'm sad. I missed your last one.
Who knows at this moment in time? A lot of stuff is up in the air for us, but hopefully very soon. Hopefully very soon. Yeah. And definitely when the sun comes out, because it's pretty cold and pretty grim. So at the moment, so it'd be nice to go out there and get some sun. But thank you very much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been such a joy. Yeah. Thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Thank you. So listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, obviously we've got stacks of other episodes for you to enjoy also. In the bio, we will put links into what Bianca's up to, so you can see her beautiful studio. It is lovely if you're into Pilates. Also, obviously, if you want any more information, we've got the Puzzle Wisdom website for you to check out. But that's about it until the next time. So take care of yourselves.